Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling is a live call-in radio program providing doctrinal dialogue, cultural commentary, and insightful interviews with some of today's foremost Christian authors and leaders. Knowing the Truth is the outreach ministry of the Mountain Bridge Bible Fellowship, located on Highway 25 in Travelers Rest. The goal of the church and the radio program is to seek the glory of God in the salvation of sinners and the sanctification of the saints by the ministry of the Word. For more information, go to www.knowingthetruth.org. Here with today's edition of Knowing the Truth is Pastor Kevin Bowling.
Hey, welcome into this edition of the Knowing the Truth radio broadcast. This is Pastor Kevin Bowling. So glad that you joined us today on the broadcast. I hope you're doing okay. I hope that the vortex of vulnerability has not gotten you. Did a program on that topic yesterday, and we've already had 120 downloads of that broadcast. Apparently, it resonated with quite a few people. We had Dr. James Wanless was on with us yesterday. He's a space physicist. There you go. And that's there's some deep discussion there. He was talking with us about light and other things as well. And a couple of the things that we were talking about is just all the hype that the hyper-environmentalists, you know, the global warming alarmist side of things, are getting out of this storm. Somehow they're trying to convince people that just the jet stream dipping down, that's what we used to call it, right, the jet stream, just dip down a little bit into the United States. Now it's called the polar vortex is the title of this. And so we asked Dr. Wanless yesterday to help us to understand, you know, what's going on here and how in the world the alarmists can try to change this frigid storm into telling us that it's part of global warming. By the way, Time magazine warned us that a vortex that took place in 1974 was the result of global cooling. So I'm confused. Anyways, just before the broadcast started, I thought I'd go out and just type in on the newswire there the word vortex to see how many news items or associations are using it. We've got NBC News saying polar vortex, temperatures getting dramatically warmer as cold sets in. I don't know how that happens, but again, these things, they're kind of like Bizarro World, I think, on Seinfeld. But anyways, it's here's another one. Fox News, polar vortex breaks temperature records. CNN, frigid air from North Pole. What is a polar vortex, they ask? That's what everybody's asking. NPR, what is the polar vortex and what is it doing to us? This is the Weather Channel. The deep freeze, was the polar vortex really the cause? I mean, this thing is everywhere, right? It's like the blob from a science fiction film or something. So there's where we're at. We are now broadcasting live this morning from a bunker in South Carolina where we are hiding out from the vortex in order to just try to get the radio broadcast out here today. And joining us first up is Jamie Dean. Somewhere in another vortex capable bunker in the country here somewhere where she is well sheltered from what is taking place across the country. She's going to be joining us first up on the broadcast today. And then afterwards, we're going to be talking with Rachel Jankowitz. She is an author. She's written a very popular book early on. Last year, I interviewed her about that book, about motherhood. And now she's got a second book out called Fit to Burst. And so we're going to talk with Rachel in the second half of the program today. Let's go to Jamie Dean. We'll find out where she's at, how she was sequestered away out from the vortex. Jamie, where would you be on the grid today?
Well, I'm in a bunker in North Carolina, so for now, I think I'm safe.
You think you're safe? Wow, can they get some mileage out of a news item? It's unbelievable. But I'm glad to see I'm out here on World Magazine's website, and I don't see the word vortex mentioned out here, which I'm very happy about.
Yeah, I guess we're going to have to catch up on that one sometime later on in the day.
We'll see. Hey, you can still use it. I think it'll be good all week long. I think it's going to be 63 here in Greenville on Saturday, so you probably won't be able to use it up around that time. But any time up until that point would be great. Hey, I wanted to ask you about some of the lead stories that World Magazine is reporting on. But first of all, the story that you wrote most recently about an uncivil war that is taking place, and that the one dealing with the war taking place in the Sudan. If you would, bring our listeners up to speed on what is taking place there.
Well, this is really a tragic story, and I find it personally tragic as well. I've been to South Sudan a few times and just very saddened by this. But South Sudan, of course, is the country, the world's newest country. So they declared their independence from Northern Sudan in 2011 after a very long, decades-long, brutal civil war with Northern Sudan for their own freedom. And now basically they're fighting amongst themselves. They are really on the brink of a civil war within South Sudan between forces who are loyal to the current president and forces who are loyal to the former vice president of that country. And what's really exacerbated those problems is that the president and the former vice president are from two different tribes. Mm. One is a Dinka, one is a Nuer. And so what began as a political conflict and really a power struggle for political control has really escalated and turned into an ethnic conflict. So there was fighting in the country's capital, but that has bled out into at least six of the country's 10 states as the different tribes are finding out that there's conflict and there's war. They're just starting to basically fight each other, and it's getting farther and farther removed from the political issues that were at hand. And so that kind of thing can get out of control very, very quickly, and there's a lot of fear that the country could just spiral into a civil war.
Mm. Now, I remember some previous discussions that we had on this, both with you, Jamie, and also with Mindy Bells, I believe, somewhere in one of the previous interviews that we did. And if I remember right, that a large Christian population in the south, I believe it was, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that they had gone into kind of a mountainous area in the south. Is that correct?
Well, I think what you're thinking of is that South Sudan is largely Christian. I mean, there's certainly animism and some other religions there, but South Sudan is largely Christian. North Sudan is largely Muslim. Mm-hmm. And so the civil war that unfolded between those two countries for the better part of 20 years, from the 1980s up into the early 2000s, was the Islamic North basically trying to impose Sharia law on the Christian South, and the Christian South resisted that. The North invaded, many, many people fled, many, many people killed, an awful civil war, but the South held their ground pretty remarkably, actually, considering what they were up against, and they were able to prevail, basically. The North signed a peace agreement with them in 2005, and those hostilities ceased. And later on, South Sudan became its own country. Now, since then, there's been lots of conflict over the oil fields, as there always seems to be, that are right along the north-south border. And neither side has really completely agreed on who owns those oil fields. I mean, the South has lots of oil fields, but there are some particularly rich ones along this border. And so what's happened is that there are Christians who, when North and South divided, found themselves all of a sudden on the northern side, even though they're Christian. So they kind of got bumped to the wrong side, I guess, for lack of a better term. And the North has really come down and really bombarded that group of Christians that are just above the border. In the Nuba Mountains, I think is what you're thinking of, really bombarded them, really persecuted them pretty heavily. And those Christians have begun fleeing into South Sudan. And that was a conflict that was going on all last year, really the last couple of years. And so that's another really vulnerable population, already vulnerable before any of this broke out, who are going to be even more vulnerable as this unfolds. You talk about a vortex of vulnerability. I mean, this is where the real trouble in the world is happening. I mean, this is some serious business for these folks who are really stranded in this situation.
So now you've got the South. They form a new country, and very shortly after they form a new country, all of a sudden civil war is now broken out, and this new country, the status of it, is in jeopardy, right?
Yeah, it's really sad. And like I said, a lot of it is this conflict between the president, whose name is Salva Kiir, and the former vice president, whose name is Riek Machar. And, you know, there's been lots of problems since the country declared its independence. A lot of people have been dissatisfied with the president, Salva Kiir. There's been tons of mismanagement. I mean, this country has gotten billions of dollars in aid. The United States has sent them lots and lots of aid and lots of just personal capital and trying to work with them on building a new government. But a lot of that money has just gotten squandered, and there's a lot of corruption within the government. You know, the government itself reports that they've just lost money that they don't even know where it is. And there's just been lots of problems. So there's been a lot of unrest that's been building. So this isn't something that just happened overnight.
Yeah.
This has been building up for some time, tensions growing between these two sides. And then when some fighting broke out in an army barrack in December, it just spread pretty quickly. Now, one of the things that's important to mention is that the rebel leader, Machar, who we're talking about, this former vice president, has also had a very checkered past in South Sudan. During their previous civil war, he switched sides, went back and forth between the North and the South, led a massacre of Dinka tribesmen in 1991. So there's no particular reason to trust him either. I mean, it really is a pretty big mess. And so at this point, they're in peace talks in Ethiopia. They're trying to mediate between these two sides, and it's just really unclear what kind of agreement they can come to cease these hostilities.
Mm-hmm. You talked about the U.S. aid that has been sent to these regions previously to the tune of billions of dollars, as you mentioned. And I think that, unfortunately for them, I think the patience of the American people about sending these types of dollars overseas is wearing thin. One, we don't have the money anymore to just do this willy-nilly. And two, when we keep seeing things and hearing reports come back that we're not quite sure where the money went, and now we're not quite sure who we're actually giving the money to, whether the rebel is for us or against us or will be against us, I think that they're going to be hard-pressed again to get any, you know, meaningful assistance again from the United States, because we're just unsure, you know, who we're actually assisting. So, unfortunately, these things are taking place at a very bad time for them. What's the prognosis here? What do you think is going to take place?
Well, you know, we've sent our ambassador, the U.S. has sent their ambassador, Donald Booth, to try to help with these talks. And the U.S. does have quite a bit of capital with South Sudan. I mean, we really did do pretty tremendous things to help them gain their independence. So we definitely have an in with those folks. Whether or not they'll listen to our counsel, I don't know. You know, in terms of U.S. involvement going forward, it's hard to imagine that we would pull out in terms of at least trying to offer mediation and counsel. And I doubt we'll pull out money, to be quite frank. I mean, you know, maybe we will, but I sort of doubt that. And so it's just going to be hard. It's going to be hard to see. I mean, a lot of it's going to depend on how these two sides can resolve this issue. I mean, some people are saying both men should just stand down and say neither one of us are going to run for the presidency in a couple of years, and we're going to let South Sudanese elect someone new, and we're going to try to kind of start this process afresh. But neither side seems to be willing to do that. And so, you know, we're just going to see on that. But I think also we're going to need to really watch the humanitarian situation there. That's getting much worse. Samaritan's Purse is one of the leading humanitarian groups in South Sudan. I talked with one of their top leaders yesterday who's very, very concerned, a man named Ken Isaacs, who's been involved in South Sudan since 1989 probably, knows the country really well. And he said, you know, he is not alarmist. Ken Isaacs is not alarmist, and he is pretty alarmed at this point and says in the refugee camps where they're working, they're very worried about their supply routes being cut off. And in one, he says, basically, we have enough food to last us till February. And after that, there's going to be about 70,000 people that we're going to be struggling to feed. So definitely a cause for prayer, especially just lots of Christians there, you know. And I find myself really wanting to pray for these pastors in South Sudan, because really the gospel should speak to these issues of tribal conflict. I mean, the gospel cuts through all that, right?
Yeah.
That's the beauty of the gospel. It's every nation, tribe, and tongue. And so I've really been convicted to be in prayer that these pastors can, just in their spiritual leadership, lead their churches and communities, hopefully, to see the gospel's answer to some of these tribal conflicts.
Amen. You know, the gospel goes across cultures there, and obviously you would think that the instruction there in the churches from the leadership and the pastoral leadership taking place, that that could have a dramatic impact upon the outcome of this situation, and we'll certainly pray to that end. I wanted to ask you not just about the article that you wrote, but also about some of the most popular articles that have been on World Magazine here. Whoops, did we lose it? Oh, the Vortex. I think it was the Vortex of Vulnerability that took Jamie down. We'll talk to her in just a couple minutes. There were a couple of most popular articles that were out on World Mag that I wanted to ask her about. Let me read them to you here just very quickly. There's three of them. One says, actively engaged in the abortion battle. I think this is Matt Chandler, who is, you know, part of the X29 network and so forth. And he gives a pretty impassioned plea for the young, restless, and reformed crowd to get involved in what is taking place in the abortion battle. So I thought that that was interesting. Secondly, you know, well, in fact, I think we got Jamie back on the line. Jamie, we were saying that was the Vortex. Was that what happened there?
It must have been. I should have been joking about it earlier.
I know.
Sure what happened.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't think we should speak evil of it or something. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not sure what happened. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. Let me ask you about a couple of those popular stories. I was just starting to mention that you have one out there about, is it Matt Chandler, I think, who had really made quite an impassioned plea for people, and I think specifically he is addressing the young, restless, and reformed crowd. He's the head of president of the X29 network. And he was basically telling them, you know, don't forget about the abortion battle. In fact, get involved in it big time and, you know, really stand up and don't be on the sidelines about this thing. So I wanted to just get you to talk about that a little bit. And then there's one or two other popular stories out on World Mag that I wanted to just briefly discuss as well.
Yeah, that story has gotten a lot of traction, and I'm encouraged by the fact that it got a lot of traction and that Matt Chandler is speaking to this issue. This is really part of a sermon of his that we posted on our website. And, you know, there is lots of concern among young evangelical Christians and reformed evangelical Christians about issues related to justice and poverty fighting and all of those things that are good. But I appreciate that Matt Chandler was saying, you know, don't think that abortion is sort of an old school idea. I think that's what he was getting at. Don't think that was yesterday's battle. This is the preeminent battle in this country. I mean, this is a major issue that in some ways transcends other issues. You know, when we're talking about essentially the Holocaust of thousands and thousands of unborn babies. And so I think his call was a call to be concerned about those other things as well, but not forget about this catastrophe that our country's been plunged into. Because I think, you know, we all get anesthetized to it. Mm-hmm. We all get a bit numb to it. We come to terms with living in a country that does this every day, today, in your city, in my city.
Mm-hmm.
And so I appreciate Matt Chandler's desire to take some of that passion and fire among younger evangelicals and ask them to channel it in this way, too.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, in the folks that he is involved with and sort of represents, they did see that the abortion battle was a leftover from the culture wars, and they're all about social justice and so forth and human trafficking and these types of issues. And I think that I'm very happy that he reminds them that this is a social justice issue. This is the issue of our times, And for, you know, any group of Christians to be sitting on the sideline and just relegating that off to a Cold War issue from the Cold War or the Culture Wars here in America, I think is a tremendous miscalculation. And I'm so glad that he called them, you know, to give that the attention that it deserves. By the way, let me tell our listening audience that this Saturday, January 11th, at the State House in Columbia, South Carolina, they're going to be having a Stand Up for Life march and rally. And the keynote speaker there is going to be David Barton. He's the president of Wall Builders. Their program airs on this station as well. And David's going to be my guest on tomorrow's broadcast. So the second half of tomorrow's broadcast, I'll be speaking with David Barton about, among other things, but about him speaking at that Stand Up for Life march and rally on Saturday. Jamie, I also wanted to ask you about Mark Driscoll. Not that long ago, just a couple weeks ago or so, Janet Mefford was here with me in the studio right after all of the hubbub that came up about Mark Driscoll. You guys have listed out on World Magazine now that more publishers are investigating Mark Driscoll. And I guess that's Crossway and also Nav Press have now said that, hey, we're going to look over our material from the books that we have published for Mark Driscoll just to ensure that, you know, that there wasn't any plagiarism-type issues that took place there. Is that correct? Is that the gist of the story?
That's the gist of it. And I think that that's not surprising. I mean, I think it's due diligence for publishers, especially Crossway, I think, has published 9 books by Mark Driscoll. Mm-hmm. So it would be, I think, due diligence for them to look back through that and make sure that those books are all clear. You know, Mark Driscoll has taken some responsibility in this and said that yes, there were parts of books that he's written that were not attributed properly. I mean, I think you said that was an error, not an intentional, you know, act of plagiarism, and I guess everyone can parse through that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess Crossway and these other publishers just want to make sure that there's nothing in their books either that would raise concerns.
Mm-hmm. And then a story that just will not go away and should not go away is the story about Benghazi that is also one of the most popular stories out on World Magazine right now. And it's titled, Hillary Killed My Son. That's a pretty strong statement there. But Benghazi attacks one of the victims of Benghazi, the mother of one of the victims. You know, she really is taking Hillary Clinton to task, which is pretty important that she's doing this because of that New York Times piece that came out that seemed to try to exonerate Hillary and the administration as to their assessment of what was taking place in Benghazi. So this issue is, especially with Hillary now announcing she's going to be running in 2016, this issue is not going away, right?
No, I don't think it is, and I think you're right that it should not. And even beyond Hillary Clinton running for president, which I think is important for us to discuss that ahead of any presidential run, it's just important for the issue of truth.
Yes.
I mean, whatever happened in Benghazi, we should know about that. And I think it's clear that we don't know about that.
Mm.
And Hillary Clinton's answer so far has essentially been, what does it matter now? These people are dead. And that's bad. And what does it matter what happened? Well, of course it matters what happened.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly matters to Pat Smith, the mother of Sean Smith, who was killed, and that certainly matters to the families of the other victims. And it just matters in terms of what are we doing in all these different parts of the world where we have these embassies and we have these stations, and are we really facing the threat the way that we should be? And are we handling it well when we fail? I mean, I think that this idea that you would cover up failure in this way is kind of breathtaking. And so I think that that's a story that is definitely not going to go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think exactly the same that, you know, it was unconscionable to me that once something started there, whatever the cause was, that we didn't send some sort of assets there to help, to leave them there. And knowing that they don't have enough people there to fend off the group that was there was just sentencing them to death. And I think that is the unconscionable part. Why weren't assets sent We heard early on that one of the individuals that was there went and painted the target with a laser. Now, the only reason that you would do that is if you were under the impression that a strike was going to be called in. You give away your position when you do that, but he must have been under the impression that some sort of a drone strike or somebody was coming to help and that this would help in that situation. And I just find that part of the story just that we can't, in good conscience, put people out in that position if we're not going to have their back if something goes wrong. And that's what I would like to know. I would like to know who made the decision not to do something afterwards. We're talking in this day and age. We could have had, in fact, we know we had a drone overhead. We could have had some sort of response there to help these people out, and to just leave them there is just the part that I can't stomach or fathom how we could do that. So I hope it doesn't go away, and I hope somebody is held accountable and changes are made so that something like that never, ever happens again to any of our people out there in the field. Jamie, thank you so much for bringing us up to speed on a number of these issues. And again, we really appreciate the great work you guys do there at World Magazine. So many different things coming out. You guys got a whole other projects going on. The website looks great. Regular updates. Boy, there's just a bunch of stuff. You guys are doing an excellent job.
Well, thanks so much. We always appreciate talking with you as well.
Okay. That was Jamie Dean. She's the news editor for World Magazine, and you can go out there to the website. Their website is www.worldmag.com. I was just speaking to an individual the other day. He said, hey, I went ahead and got a couple of issues of World Magazine sent to some friends of mine, and he ended up getting a $20 gift certificate to Crossway Books. As a result of that, they had a special running. I don't know if that's still good, but you can go out there and check it out and see if that's available. Either way, get a copy of World Magazine and get it sent directly to your home. We're going to be back in just a couple minutes to talk about motherhood. You won't want to miss it. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Knowing the Truth with Pastor Kevin Bowling. For more information about today's program, the radio ministry, and the resources we offer, go to www.knowingthetruth.org.